a chick. So say goodbye to everything you ever knew before. And I'd understand if you went running out the door. And I'll keep you safe, and no harm will ever come to you, I swear. And I'll kill if they even dare.
Hi.
Hi,
Look
Your
at
Highness.
This hog leg.
Oh my God, it's huge.
Welcome to Michigan Murders and Music, where we discuss murders in our gorgeous state, top it off with a little homegrown music, leaving you with a happy ending and on a good note.
Thank you for allowing us to seep into your ears. We have new listeners.
We do.
You want me to start reading some?
I have Britt Matting.
I have Matt Haveman. You say Haveman, I say Haveman.
I say tomato, you say tomato.
Jennifer William.
Megan LaFontaine.
Alexandra.
Judith Lowe.
Maddie Thorpe.
Is that it?
What's this old buds thing?
Those are buds? The old buds. Remember? Maddie Thorpe and Alexandra.
These are our old buds. Yeah. I have an explicit content warning. Should I do that right now?
I think you should, yes.
Okay. So, Her Highness is going to say naughty words that...
Like, this fucking camera just pissed me off.
Very offensive.
And I really want to still use it, so I got to get it out of my view.
Yeah, get it out of my view, too, because you're going to cram it up my hiney.
I'm going to cram it right between your taint. Right between your taint? No.
No, that would hurt.
It's the taint.
Yeah. See? She's going to say things that are offensive to most people.
I don't mean to be offensive.
Don't listen... Get your kids out of the room. Just be careful because she's going to say things that are offensive. All right. If you're driving down the interstate and you see the remains of a grass fire and you ask your partner in your car.
Was it me?
Oh, was that you? Could that have been you?
Nope. I don't.
That's not where we were when they threw that cigarette butt out the window. Nope. That never happened. Nope. Don't throw your stinky cigarette butts out the window.
I will whoop somebody. I will seriously whoop your ass.
Whoop their bottoms.
I fucking cannot.
I see that grass burned on the side of the interstate. Dander, here and there.
Why are you licking my dress?
It's the dog, not me.
We would like to keep our podcast commercial free and independent. So if you're feeling a little bit tipsy, please check out our website and feel free to donate or buy some merch.
Share us with a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Check us out on all the usual places, Instagram, Facebook,
like a bad
TikTok.
Disease.
Mm-hmm. Who are we featuring this week?
This week, our happy ending, your happy ending, is Short Panic.
Short Panic.
And
these guys are awesome.
Our Funk A. Funk. Funk.
I
funk,
like
funk.
It. Mm. It's my stuff.
Boo. Our story is straight out of the 1900s in Grand Rapids, Michigan today.
Real close to where we
1900s.
Live.
1900s.
I love it.
So long ago. Back in yesterday. Arthur Waite is who we are talking about. Arthur grew up in the outskirts of Grand Rapids and was the son of a fruit and veggie farmer. Parents Warren W. and Sarah Jane Waite. Son of a fucking lawyer.
It sounds derogatory. Most accounts pegged Arthur as the classic jock in high school who, surprisingly for the times, crossed the lines into drama classes.
Dude, that never happens. I mean, it does now, but it didn't back then. Arthur, like so many kids then and now, cheated his way all the way through to graduation, like all the way through high school.
Arthur's family would see the real side of him. They knew the kind of fuck up he was.
This could
have come straight out of one of my explicit content warnings.
Dude, yes. He did all that. Of the things. He killed animals. Check. He was easily angered and violent. Check, check.
Yeah.
He was busted for stealing things.
Oh, yeah.
Check, check, checkity, check.
Yeah.
And more.
I don't think he was ever charged for stealing things, but we can see that Arthur Waite was an almighty ass hat.
Almighty a-hole. Mm-hmm. While Arthur was growing up in the farmland of Grand Rapids, he often went to the big city to gallivant with the rich and the highfalutin, the pauper visiting the rich.
At the country club, yeah, apparently.
I don't know.
To shoot their shotguns.
Someone's and whack golf balls around. Mm-hmm. Where are my Argyle socks, mother?
In the early 1900s, Grand Rapids was having a huge population boom.
Big. It was considered Furniture City for many years. Mm-hmm. It was like a big logging thing, big logging area, and we made furniture, mm-hmm, and people were flocking to Grand Rapids, kind of like they are now.
Differently.
Except for now we're Hop City.
Beers.
It's like beers, just fucking beer everywhere.
John and Thomas Peck were the children of Elias and Catherine Peck of New York City.
New York City?
The children learned a lot about running a business and about pharmaceuticals from their father while growing up in New York City.
John Peck married his second wife, Hannah, in New York, and they would eventually move to Grand Rapids with Thomas.
The brothers Peck would bring their learned pharmaceutical skills to Grand Rapids in the late 1800s.
John and Hannah would go on to have three children in Michigan. Percy. Knock it off. Clara. And one child that passed away as a teenager.
That'd be horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's already bad enough losing a baby, but ooh. John and Thomas Peck opened a pharmacy together in Grand Rapids. It's on the corner of Monroe Street and some other street in 1875 and is known to this day as a classic part of Grand Rapids history. That was Peck Pharmacy, boo.
Yeah, it was called Peck Brothers Drug Company. And just recently, the Peck Pharmacy was uncovered. And you could see the old writing on the
Renovating the building. And when they took off the facade, they uncovered the original bricks of the building where it said Peck Pharmacy. It's super cool. The Peck family became very wealthy with their pharmacy. However, they were not known to be snobs. They did attend all of the Grand Rapids elite happenings, you know, the galas and the stuff. And they seemed to be betrayed as a very humble family.
They were cool.
Yeah.
Well known, but cool.
Well, you know, when you have money, a lot of it's about connections. So you got to go out there and make your face known.
In church.
And among all the peoples.
Be seen.
Be seen and be heard. Mm-hmm.
John and Hannah's son, Percy, no judgment here with the name.
You shouldn't be.
Okay.
I'm going to throw that nanny light can at you.
And start his own family.
Yeah.
However, as of 1915, Miss Clara.
Clara. Oh, my God. Clara. Okay,
Miss Clara. Is still not married. She is the spinster.
Do you think she's considered a spinster then?
Yeah, 22 years old. I don't know.
No.
Is that how old she is?
She was, I don't know how old she was.
I don't know. 23?
The brothers Peck sold the business that the two of them worked so hard to grow, and they received millions for the sale, boot.
Millions?
In 1914. Uh-huh. The sale was complete, and the Peck building had a new pharmacy, and it was called Revco.
Well, Revco was a big thing.
It was. And it was in that building until the late 1980s, actually.
Oh, my God. I know exactly which building.
So it was there for a long-ass time. Jesus, yeah, the one right on the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Peck building. Oh, my God. That's where the Peck pharmacy was. Now you understand?
Yeah.
Good Lord. I'm glad you caught up.
I only read this story four times and actually went and photographed the Peck house.
By the house for me. I think, the picture you took is so cool. I can't wait to share it with everybody. Yeah.
Meanwhile, good old cheater Arthur Waite is eyeballing the family, keeping tabs on them.
Arthur was even at a few of the Grand Rapids balls. Cheese balls. Cheese balls.
Family balls.
I do believe. After all, the Peck family home had the largest ballroom in Grand Rapids. Fancy schmancy.
That's a lot of ballroom.
There's a lot of room for balls. Mm. I'm sure that he attended a few there and set his sights upon the Peck family fortune. Dun, dun, dun.
Arthur wanted to be a dentist.
I want to be. How can you not think of the fucking Christmas show?
I know. He's got a little pompadour thing.
When I wrote that, I laughed right out loud. And I heard in my head, I want to be a dentist.
So he wanted to be a dentist and he grew up. And so he applied at the U of M.
Dudes, this son of a farmer didn't stop his cheating at high school level.
It's that easy.
He literally lied, cheated, and falsified his way into the University of Michigan.
I don't think you can do that anymore. See,
I don't think so. It's probably a little easier back in the 1900s when you get them.
The dental program apparently accepted him, and he graduated with his dental degree the same way he graduated from high school.
Lying.
Cheating.
Talking his way through. Mm-hmm. Blowing air out his asshole.
Arthur applied for a job with a British company that tended to recruit students from the University of Michigan.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah,
it's like the 1900s.
Why would the British company?
I don't know. Didn't we leave Britain for a reason? This isn't a history podcast. I don't know.
I don't know. Never mind.
We shouldn't be surprised when I say that Arthur forged paperwork regarding his post-grad work and other rather important items that one should actually do before becoming a dentist. Did you just smell your fingers? I swear to God, I just saw you smell your fingers.
No, I just wiped a piece of chew off my lip.
Ew.
What do you mean, ew?
Ew.
I don't smoke your giant fucking dick weed.
Dude, it's so good.
It's a giant cock that you're putting in your mouth.
It's pretty large, isn't it? Don't be jealous. Don't be hating.
No, it's bigger than my dick. Why would I not be jealous? I'm not jealous. You know what?
Okay, so... Oh, my God. So we know that Arthur is... He faked his way into being a dentist, too. Like, he forged paperwork saying he did post-grad work at some Grand Rapids dental office. And back then, it's not like they had phones. They could just dial up and say, hey, yo, did maybe Arthur a telegraph. Work for you?
Then. So this dude headed off to Britain with all of his fake documentation as a dentist. I don't remember seeing where any weird mishaps with him happened in Britain. Were there any?
I don't think so. Okay. I couldn't find any.
He apparently worked there for a while, faked his way through more classes, and then I think he jumped an opportunity to work in Africa.
How does this happen in the 1900s? It must have been cheap because I can't go work in Britain.
It's pre-World
and then
War
go
II.
Off things are to Africa and just
pre-World
work.
War One. Yeah.
Holy crap!
Things were a whole lot different back then.
When he gets to Africa, it's not long before he's up to his good old no good behavior.
He starts stealing dental gold and other weird things he could get his hands on.
That literally creeps my teeth out. Like there's gold in your teeth.
He doesn't leave Africa until he gets into legal trouble with a woman.
Wow, wow.
Oh, yeah, because he couldn't keep his pee-pee in his pants.
Always keep your pee-pee in your pants.
Always.
Your pantalones.
Always.
He hightails it the fuck out of Africa real quick, like, with his pee-pee in his pants. He's like, I'm out.
It was still halfway out, and he's running with
he's
it halfway
just out.
Mm-hmm.
I read that he actually paid his way out of that situation. Big surprise there.
He's a fucking
It's been happening
fuck.
For years. It keeps happening. Narcissistic fucking assholes. Arthur came back to the good old United States of America in 1914.
He works in New York City as a dental surgeon?
Dude.
What? A surgeon.
It makes me think of that podcast, Dr. Death. Ugh. I get the cringies thinking that a fake dentist is working on someone's teeth. Oh, doesn't it give you the hibby-jibbies?
Yes.
It really gives me the hibby-jibbies.
Yes. Finally, Arthur makes his way back to Grand Rapids, where there is all sorts of local hype about his
It's about the farmer's boy who became a dentist and traveled worldwide.
Oh, he's a worldly man.
He's
a worldly man.
He's now like, I am a dentist. I'm rich. I have gold.
And
I was a son of a farmer.
Uses his infamy as a way into Grand Rapids upper society.
Yes.
Mm.
He still has his eyeballs, his eye sacks on Clara Peck. Clara Peck's money.
Yeah. Clara.
It's not Clara.
Remembers Arthur from younger days.
Pecker.
But she doesn't really like him all that much. Hannah Peck does, though.
Hannah Peck's her mom.
So mother is like, you need to go check out this young man. You know, learn more about him.
No, dude, I don't think so. Mm-mm. It seems kind of weird to me, but okay. This is because Arthur has weaseled his way into the Peck's family via Hannah. Like, he got on mom's good side.
Yep.
So that she would whisper sweet nothings about him into Clara's ear. So he could weasel his way in.
You know, at this point, Clara.
I hate you.
Old maid.
He's such a.
Ow!
Jesus, too clean in here. I don't have anything to throw at you.
That hurt.
Name's not Clara.
Okay.
God.
Nope.
It's not a Clara. Fat girl's name. Oh.
Clara is a fat girl's name. Claire. Should we just call her Claire from now on?
No.
That might be why she's not married.
Clara.
Clara. I'm sorry. Claire and Arthur.
Clara.
Claire and Arthur are lawfully wed in what I would assume is a huge affair.
On September 9 in 1915, I did try to look for the old newspapers, and nothing came up on newspapers.com, which is kind of weird to me.
You subscribe to that.
I know.
Oh.
But you know
they're
what?
Erasing history for us.
Oh,
because we don't need to know.
If I was a better podcaster, I would know that for you guys, but I don't.
Shortly after, the newlywed couple, Mr. and Mrs. Arthur Waite, would move to New York City so he can proceed with his fake dental business.
I mean, it's real. He just isn't real. The business is real. He's right. Just fake. Does he even have a bit? I don't know. Arthur and Clara lived lavishly in New York City. He was told that their apartment had a view of Central Park and all of the latest and greatest, like furniture and stuff, which means it must have been sent from Grand Rapids.
Well, of course, because that's where they make furniture.
Furniture City.
At that time. Back in Grand Rapids, the brothers Peck have sold their pharmacy, are millionaires, and
millionaires.
They move on to make money in different ways.
Both men become very involved in the city and the banks and all of the things that rich people did in the 1900s to make money. They were like, you know, they just invested and did stuff like that.
They were the bourgeois
They became, they also donated to, what are those called?
I don't know.
Charities. They donated a lot of their time and energy to charities.
About a year later, in 1916, Mr. and Mrs. Peck planned a trip to New York City to visit their only daughter, Clara, and her husband. See their new digs and all of that.
Yeah, but before the trip out there, John had some sort of business come up, and he ended up staying here in Grand Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
Suck.
Mrs. Hannah hopped on the train and made her way to New York City.
By the way, a train ride to New York City from Grand Rapids in the 1900s would take a couple of days.
You know, I would enjoy that nowadays.
I'd honestly...
Without someone being a psychopath and killing members of the family.
Yeah, without the other part of it. It wouldn't be so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, do you feel that summer breeze coming in?
It's funny you said that because,
it smells
I know
so
it smells good.
Good
too.
Soon after Clara's mother arrived at their abode, she became sick, like really sick.
They believed that she may have ended up with food poisoning from their trip.
Ugh. On Sunday, January 30th, 1916, Mrs. Peck was found dead in her own daughter's home.
Think about the logistics of a DB. A dead body back then. What do you do with it? Then now I have to arrange to get Mrs. Peck back to Grand Rapids via a train.
That's so weird to me to think about that now. Arthur claims that Mrs. Peck begged for cremation while she was dying.
Yeah.
Well, which didn't really sit well with her family because they were Catholic, I think, and they didn't really believe cremation was a thing.
Yeah.
Don't mark my words on that. But I do know she didn't want to be cremated.
I don't know that Hannah Peck's funeral was held at, as a most customary funeral home or a parlor.
It was in the parlor of their home, I did find out. Oh. Of the home that you took pictures of.
Oh, it was in there.
Yeah.
Neat.
So Mrs. Peck's funeral was...
Mean neat, but...
I mean, that's what they did back then.
I know.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's weird. Now.
Well, now it seems weird, yeah. It was, of course, a big deal, her funeral was, as I'm sure most of Grand Rapids paid their respects to such a lovely, high-standing woman of their community.
Mr. Peck goes on living in their huge home. Widower? He's a widower.
I wonder how many ladies tried to get after him.
Oh, God.
He was rich as fuck.
You know, he's probably trying
to beat him off with his dick.
Yeah, yeah. And you know it was big. Otherwise, how would you pull this shit off? You got to have a big dick to
do that. He gets so sick of knocking down ladies with his big dick that he decides he's going to go out to visit his only daughter in New York City. And so he does. He travels there on an old train in March of 1916.
It's like in March or something, you said?
Yep. You can't make that shit up.
Surprisingly.
Are you okay?
Surprisingly, Mr. Peck becomes really ill while visiting the White home, too. I gotta go pee.
Mr. Peck is in New York and he is sick for days. It is a really drawn out illness this time, Boot.
He's majorly sick. Yeah. Something's really wrong.
And crazily enough, Clara becomes sick while her dad is visiting.
Oh, they must imagine
have,
that.
Okay, they must have the same virus. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's what I thought. Yep. I'm definitely an investigator. I'm good at this shit.
Sadly, on March 21st, 1916, Mr. Peck was found.
Oh, my God.
He had passed away in his daughter's home after weeks of being ill.
Nothing suspicious at all here. And what's funny is that they didn't see it as suspicious. Arthur insisted that Mr. Peck also wanted to be cremated. And at this point, nobody is suspicious of him at all. They just think it's the 1900s.
Yeah, people
die. People died a lot.
Whatever. Yeah.
Until they were suspicious, Boot.
Yeah. Well, while they were headed back to Michigan via train, a very important telegram would be sent to Grand Rapids and beat them home.
The telegram was sent to Percy Peck, Clara's brother, and went a little bit like this.
Dear Mr. and Mrs. Percy and Ella Peck of the Grand Rapids Peck family. As you know, Mr. Arthur Waite is on his way with Mr. John Peck's remains. Please take heed. I do believe, dear sir, that he did not die of natural causes. I advise an autopsy to determine the means of death with sincerity. K. Adams.
And we learn who K. Adams is eventually. Let's just say that without her, history and the story would have turned out completely different.
Percy Peck does the right thing and asks for an autopsy for the well-known and respected Mr. Peck of Brothers Peck.
By the time Clara and Arthur Waite arrive in Grand Rapids with the deceased body of her father, suspicion has finally aroused.
It arrived.
It's aroused. They have aroused ears are perked up. Suspicion mm-hmm. about Arthur.
Mr. John Peck is respectfully mourned at their beautiful home and laid to rest at the age of 72.
Miss Clara was so sick with typhus that she had to stay at the hotel in Grand Rapids that they were staying at. She couldn't even attend her own dad's funeral. She was that sick.
Typhus is an infectious disease caused by,
I think it's just the rickets thing. It's like... Rickettsiae.
It's characterized by a purple rash, headaches, fever, and usually delirium, and historically a cause of high mortality during wars and famines. There are several forms transmitted by vectors such as lice, ticks, mites, and rat fleas.
Rat fleas.
That's gross.
Oh my God. I don't know what's worse in here, the fake dentistry or the rat fleas or the murders.
I'm pretty disturbed by the rat fleas.
I'm really disturbed. I'm getting the
tibby. I mean, I thought the rats were kind of cute out back, but you know, not so much anymore.
Arthur did go to his father-in-law's funeral. He showed up and, like, Mr. Cool, he represented. And when Arthur returned to the hotel, he insisted, with all of this death in the family and how sick she is, that Clara should write her will right now.
Oh, right now. Yeah, nothing suspicious about that at all.
Everybody's dying in your family, Clara. I just think it's smart for you to write down. Look at how sick you are, lady. Just write down your will on this hotel stationery right here.
Yeah. So Claire wrote her will. When Arthur read it, he was not at all pleased to find that she left large portions of her money to various charities.
Go, girl. Go, girl.
So he stood over her shoulder and made her rewrite her will so that the money would go to him.
Dick.
Oh, yeah.
What a fucking dick. He literally made her rip up the first will.
Meanwhile, Percy is finding out the results from the autopsy performed in Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
The results, along with the telegraph, were enough for him to hire a private investigator.
Private eye.
To start looking into his brother-in-law, Arthur Waite.
He's watching him, watching him.
All right, knock it off.
Oh. Really get into that.
Yeah, I know.
This joint was so good. As his wife is sick at the hotel, Arthur is feeding crap into her ear canals. Like, Percy is starting to look sick. This can't be good at all, Clara. Everybody in your family is dying off like flies. They're just dropping.
All the while assuring his wife that he is here for her through all of this, through sickness and in health. And richer and poorer.
No, for richer.
Richer. Oh, I get it.
Yeah, he's not about to be poor over any of this. He is going to all lengths possible to become rich. That's his whole modus operandi.
So what'd you say to her?
Oh, Clara, you are looking pretty ill, too. I know that you're mourning your father, but you are looking rather ill, my love.
The investigation into the Peck family murders is underway. The family priest has now joined the crusade against Arthur, pushing Percy to dig further.
That's awesome that the priest joins in.
Yeah.
The three of them hop on that goddamn train again, going to New York to dig up dirt on Arthur out there where they lived and where everybody died.
The private eye was set to keep
private eye.
His eyeballs on Arthur to see what he was up to on the daily.
While he was doing that, the priest and Percy were set to dig around and start asking questions.
Arthur, being, well, not book smart, but certainly had his head on a swivel, figured out that he was being looked into. He attempts to start covering his tracks.
He even attempted to bribe the maid who witnessed Arthur taint the soups that were fed to Clara's parents in New York. So there was a maid that literally saw him putting something in.
It was tainting.
It was tainting the soups.
With his taint. Gross.
Tainty things.
Yeah, you heard right. Along the way, Arthur Waite became fascinated with bacteria and infectious diseases and had obtained a collection of them.
Is that the most fucked up thing you've ever heard? He's got a collection of, what do you do? Order them from Montgomery Ward's catalog? Or
yeah.
What was it back then? Like,
oh, it was Ward's.
Ricket Joe's, like, I need some typhoid and some streptococci.
Yeah, Popular Science. Bring, you know, you can buy all that stuff.
Yeah, on the back of Reader's Digest.
Yep, comic books. You can buy x-ray glasses and all kinds of weird things.
So he actually did, in fact, put germs or bacterias into the Peck family soups. A fucking wiener.
It's too late for Arthur, though. The three sleuths from Michigan collected enough evidence. Witness statements and coincidences.
Bring two investigators, yeah.
To New York.
This is when the official police investigation into Arthur Waite and the deaths of Mr. and Mrs. John and Hannah Peck legally begins. Back in Grand Rapids, samples of Mr. Peck's stomach and eventually his brain would be sent off to U of M for a toxicology report.
This is where things get interesting. Arsenic was found in Mr. Peck's brain.
What? Surprise, surprise. Yes.
And murder was definitely the culprit.
Arthur was a practicing dentist, and they had access to all types of weird stuff like we do not today at all. Like cocaine and arsenic. Those were common uses in a dental office back then.
Clara had been adamantly against her husband's guilt. She did not believe that he would kill her parents.
No, she still just didn't get it. She's planning to return to New York despite her family's suspicions. And the family knows that she is already a dead lady walking because she's so sick. So they devise a plan that forces Clara to stay here in Grand Rapids.
She needs to help handle all of the paperwork and be there for the will stuff. I think it's during this time that the family brings up the fact that Arthur did not spend his days working on teeth. He spent his days with his mistress.
That's right. The sleuths figured out that the mistress, a cabaret singer, was said to be Arthur's arsenic hookup.
Oh, where else are you going to get it?
And he also hooked up with her some other ways.
Clara's family realizes that she has been fooled, that all of this was a plan to get her family's money.
Investigators have enough to charge Arthur and head to court. Court is held in New York City, as that is where the murders were actually committed.
Arthur's brother and father came out to New York for the trial. They are really the only two behind him. Ultimately, it will be his brother, Frank, who fights for him as much as he can, despite knowing he is guilty.
Yeah, Frank's basically just trying to fight to get the death penalty off the table for his brother. And he talks Arthur into confessing to his crime so that it reduces his sentence to life instead of...
Like the capital punishment, death, hanging.
Yeah, that.
Electric chair. Arthur agrees with Frank and chooses to admit his guilt. When he does so, though...
He
starts claiming that a little phantom dude, which he calls the little black man from Egypt.
The little black man from Egypt.
Whispering in his ear and telling him to do bad things always.
So he's basically one of the first few people to try the crazy defense. And he had actually looked up a different case similar to this and tried to simulate the same ruse with this little black man from Egypt.
Arthur was kept in the Sing Sing prison in New York, where it was said that the only visitor he had was his brother Frank's.
Needless to say, the judge did not fall for the little black man from Egypt scheme, and he slapped the death penalty right back on the table in front of Arthur. Bam, bitch.
At the trial, Clara testified against the man that she believed in for so long.
Oh, that'd be so hard.
It would be hard.
His father also testified at court, and I'm not really sure what he said. Probably, blah, 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 my son's a good kid.
Mm-hmm. He used to cut the grass.
And then there was an unwilling participant that had to testify. And that was Miss Margaret Horton, the mistress, the lover, the cabaret dancer.
She's not so pretty anymore.
Getter.
She got a little older and not so pretty.
No, I don't know. I didn't see any pictures.
Her testimony was considered hearsay as she was recalling letters sent to her from Arthur in Sing Sing. He confessed all kinds of things, but Miss Horton burned the letters, so her testimony was helpful, but hearsay.
Still considered hearsay, yeah. Jurors would later report that Mr. Waite, Arthur's dad, and Clara's testimony were the most moving and real of the entire trial. Ultimately, they found Miss Horton not to be very credible. Is it the cabaret dancer thing?
Oh, well, yeah.
God, people, come on.
Yeah, a lady of ill repute.
Remember Kay Adams, the telegraph sender?
Oh, was she a lady of ill repute?
No. She sent the telegraph from New York, and she testified. Her testimony stated that someone asked her to send the telegram, but she wouldn't say who. People believe that it was Dr. Cornwell, who was a family friend of the Pecks when they lived in New York City.
It's Cornell. Arthur took his fat, ugly balls up to the testimony stand. The audacity.
I can't believe that he fucking testified for himself. That is, did he have narcissist written right on his forehead? Well, of course.
He was said to have had quite the charming act, even grinning and smiling at times, you know. Like you said, the narcissist. What a
fucking schmuck.
Yeah.
He's a schmuck. Arthur would tell the court about spiking tea with germs, the arsenic he used. He even admitted that Mr. John Peck wasn't dying fast enough, so he used a pillow to suffocate him.
Well, yeah.
Dude.
Arthur was sent to Sing Sing to live the remainder of his life on death row.
Years later, with his brother Frank still at his side, they ate Arthur's last meal together.
On May of 21st, 1917, Arthur Waite was sent down into the electric chair, Old Sparky at Sing Sing, and he was put to death.
Yeah, they really did call it Old Sparky.
Old Sparky.
I think they were all called Old Sparky, weren't they? I think so, too.
It's like every horse at Meijer is called Sandy.
Old Sparky. In the 75 years that Sing Sing utilized the electric chair, 695 people were executed in it. And in 1965, New York City would end capital punishment. There's a fly the size of a goddamn drone in here.
It is a drone.
Jesus, who's spying that's a drone. On us? The electric chair replaced hanging in New York in 1887. So they were hanging people up till then, and then they got the electric chair.
No, let's bring
let's
back,
go back
hanging.
To hanging.
Miss Clara moved on through this tragedy, though.
So both cool.
Of her parents being killed by her own husband.
Yeah, she went on to remarry. She married a guy named John J. Caulfield, and they moved to California and lived in California.
Did they surf?
I hoped so.
I hope so, too.
And to this day, I guess she has descendants out that way. Isn't it freaking cool?
Miss Clara lived to be 76 years old before passing away on August 15th, 1964.
That is so cool, because he tried to kill the entire family in 1916. And you have to wonder, remember when the Pecks went out to visit her the first time and John had to bow out because he had business? Mm. Arthur would have tried killing both her parents that time when Hannah died. Mm. You know he would have. So this ended up being a really long game for him.
Mm, long game. Ugh. Most of the Peck family is buried in the Oakfield Cemetery.
The Peck family name lives on big time here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We said the building where the brothers Peck had their pharmacy is still called the Peck Building. Boo went for a bicycle ride the other night and found the mansion that they lived in in the Heritage Hill area.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. It sits on at 345 Washington Street.
Yeah, you can take pictures of it.
It's
you can
look beautiful. At it. It sold not too long ago.
Oh, how much? Oh, my God, I see it here.
You say how much it was sold, and I'll say what the house is.
Oh, it sold for $699,900, so $700,000.
In 2021.
Yeah.
However, the home was built in 1887 and is 6,656 square feet.
That's
and
big.
Boasts 10 bedrooms, 7 bathrooms, a full basement, and 3 fucking fireplaces.
That's
fucking
beautiful.
Fireplaces.
Yeah.
Remember, it was once the home with the largest ballroom in Grand Rapids.
If you want to get a lot more detail that we left out from this story, I highly recommend you reading this book, Your Highness.
Poisoning the Pecks of Grand Rapids, The Scandalous 1916 Murder Plot by Tobin T. Book.
There's so much information and nuances in this book that we can't.
Oh, there's so much stuff
we couldn't cover.
Yeah, and Mr. Tobin is a Michigan true crime history writer, so he has loads of information in his book. And I also encourage you to check out his website, darkcornersofhistory.com.
Tobin Book wrote in his book that Arthur called himself a soulless, moral idiot.
words they used back in the day, not our words.
Now we call them a sociopath.
I agree with Mr. Book and Mr. White. He was definitely a moral idiot.
Yep, clearly.
That was a lot of lying and a lot of craziness. And I'm going to post the picture of the house because you took a really cool picture.
Oh, good.
All right. Boo, who's our happy ending tonight?
We have a really cool... I like these guys knew you so would. Much. Oh,
that's because they are considered a funk they, rock
they
band.
They are funkier than funk.
It is funk it's, rock.
They're called Short Panic.
Short Panic. Peace out. We love you.
Thank you for choosing Michigan Murders and Music. Please rate the show wherever you listen. Michigan Murders and Music is produced by The Boots. Episodes are researched and written by Your Highness. Edited by Your Highness. Views and opinions are the sole stupidity of us and us alone. Don't blame others, please. Listening to this podcast could quite possibly cause major problems to your earballs and definitely will mess up your kids. Permission has been given to us by the bands and we purchase our music on Bandcamp.com. Support your local music scene and all local music scenes.